Some Christian kids get messed up. Some Christian kids, it must be said, get pretty messed up. Perhaps you've met some. Many are medicated. Others seem to need to be. And you don't even have to teach Christian kids a bunch of stuff that's absolutely wrong, or hit them, or anything, in order to mess them up. You simply lock them away from the world and starve their little hearts and make them afraid and guilty about everything that might give them relief. You teach them to wall themselves up inside themselves, not let their feelings out, and not let anyone or anything joyful in either. That seems to do the trick just fine, especially if they are delicate, intelligent, aware, and sensitive little tykes. You can simply omit things, slant things, overemphasize things, or otherwise present what used to be biblical ideas in such a fashion as to use them in ways God certainly never intended. Fear and control ways, instead of love and liberty ways. Churches famously raise children with more secrecy and shame and repression than is healthy, which many licensed therapists are discussing to these now adult church kids, monthly conversations with whom help said professionals pay for their timeshares in Miami. You can deny that this is a thing, or you can recognize it when you see it and try to help. A hint, saying, get over it. Smarten up and stop feeling sorry for yourself. Think of Jesus instead of yourself. Isn't terribly helpful to messed up Christian kids. Sing! Harder! Smile! Those do not have a proven track record of success either. In my case, it wasn't that my church life was terribly full of bad things that really messed me up. It was all the nothing that was the real killer. The lack of good things. The wrong-headed attempts to create good simply by purging away bad. It was that a whole lot of mundane, comforting, innocuous stuff was seen as quite normal for kids at school, but my life had simply been stripped of most of that, without really having any of it replaced with much of anything. There was just way too much nothing. I wasn't supposed to listen to rock music. It wasn't that I was encouraged to listen to classical or Christian rock music instead. Just no rock music, or country, or rap, or pop. It wasn't the music, I don't think. Not really. It was our loving it that scared adults. Jake grew up in a surprisingly similar home, with surprisingly similar rules, apart from being encouraged to listen to Christian music instead of it being viewed with suspicion in his house. Despite a more conventional evangelical upbringing, Jake reports,
what was resisted by my culture and was oppressed was listening to non-Christian music, especially heavy metal and rap. As to be expected, growing up in this situation, when I was 10 or 13, I was hugely into metal, and since then I've really loved hip-hop. I was lucky that my upbringing wasn't more legalistic because of how important music was to me in a lot of hard times. I don't know where I would have turned otherwise.
There is a way we all dressed at my meeting, in the context of the broader array of fashion seen at, say, a high school. It did not allow for self-expression or uniqueness. It was comfortably affluent and wholesome. It definitely cost a bit, too. But I wasn't an 80s preppy jock type from an upper-middle-class home who took ski weekends and wanted to become a businessman. So I didn't want to dress like that. That look didn't present me to the world as myself. It didn't feel right at all. Yet that was how we dressed. And we weren't just walking billboards for Ralph Lauren or the game of polo. There was also a class level, a race, an income bracket, and a lifestyle being advertised by our clothing. It involved a lot of beige and khaki, pinstripes and checks, loafers, golf, polo, and rugby shirts. It involved business casual. This look was what most of us were expected to be sporting. It was right for Christians. Nothing urban, nothing alternative, nothing colorful, nothing edgy, nothing bohemian, tastefully, quietly affluent, and decent and middle class, because that's what looks good. It was a good testimony. Of course, there was a whole deeper level of legalism than I ever lived under, going on in some far-flung pockets of brethrenism in North America. The especially hardcore meeting kids were dressed by their mothers like it was 1962, JFK was still president of the United States of America, and the civil rights movement and the hippies hadn't happened yet and hopefully never would. Their parents clearly felt that it was holy to dress their kids like nerd stereotypes that were echoed in the look of George McFly from Back to the Future or the nerds from Revenge of the Nerds. Old was holy. Modern was depraved. They seemed to feel that dressing in a way that the world decried as outmoded clearly showed everyone that for some homes the moral decline of America had not progressed past our front gate. There'd be no liberal decay here, so it was jean skirts and sneakers for the girls. But I did not have to suffer that. My folks saw no reason why, when Michael Jackson was moonwalking across everyone's televisions, that I needed to dress like mission control staff during Neil Armstrong's own moonwalk 20 years previous. There was none of that around where I grew up. I was allowed to dress in a normal conservative middle-of-the-road way. Didn't have to purposely nerd it up for God. I can't imagine my life would have been improved by looking any more nerdy than I already did. Talking to various ex-brethren people, I am made aware that although my father's meeting career crash-landing so heavily was very hard on our family, the opposite can be pretty hard to deal with too. I have spoken with any number of people whose fathers continued, and continue, to be men of great status among the brethren, and this brings with it a whole host of problems. Anne mentions how hard it could be to be a missionary's kid, to always feel under scrutiny, but also to feel like decisions as fundamental as where the family would be living or where the kids would be going to school were never primarily about her or what she needed. A bone-deep experience of not mattering to the family nearly as much as meeting culture was part of so many of our lives. It was exponentially worse if your family had a lot of status in that culture. It made it really hard for a teenager and 20-something to find out who she was and what life she was going to live. Anne writes,
"It is kind of revolting to read my journals from my teens, but I have the record of my sickly, predictable Christian bladder that is exactly what everyone was delighted for me to be. I can relate to how the meeting culture made identity issues clouded by discouraging individuality and presenting this notion of what type of woman I ought to be, wearing a nice dress, being modest, witnessing, praying for the young men to take part in the meetings, helping with dishes after a meal, chatting in a polite manner with older people, all with the self-conscious awareness that people would be nodding with approval and maybe some guy would notice how pious and virtuous I was and want to marry me. But I was supposed to be unconscious of all that and just be naturally beautiful and good. Meanwhile, I was into Hemingway and Steinbeck and wanted to sail boats or rock climb or build forts in the woods. If I had my way, I would have worn nothing but jean cutoffs and t-shirts."
Not everyone follows all the church expectations in a given church culture to the same degree, and small groups of friends conspire to not follow them at all. Carol describes her experience in New Zealand of not necessarily following all the rules by unspoken consensus.
"Interestingly, the rules we thought were particularly shit, like girls wearing headscarf and bicycling to school, we just did not enforce. Bizarre. Luckily, most of my year group of Taylor brethren at state school were sufficiently attuned to each other's morals that we just coexisted quite happily in that bizarrity where some Taylor brethren rules are followed and others were ignored."
I was lucky in that way too, but I know lots of other exclusive brethren kids who were not. Life for them was very different and much more locked down. I can only imagine. I knew some of those kids back in the day. Most of them aren't doing terribly well nowadays either. Questioning. At some of our meeting young people's weekends, teenagers would be encouraged to ask adults questions about the Bible, well, anonymously slip notes into a shoebox so adults could answer the questions. And for the most part, would not. They mostly wanted the Bible talk to be over so they could go play more volleyball and eat more chips. When teens did ask questions, they often weren't so much asking things about God as they were simply objecting to the meeting rules. The ones we'd all lived under our whole lives and couldn't imagine fading away. The unwritten rules, which weren't called rules, forbidding entertainment such as television, movies, pop music, dancing, live concerts, and spectator sporting events and all the rest. The rules you could break if you liked, but we all knew what that made you. Girls would put a slip of paper in asking, why can't girls wear pants? This wasn't a question so much as a complaint, and the answers involved middle-aged men reading the stitched-together bits of verse fragments that were traditionally applied to take the freedom in question away from us. Then the claim would be made that, of course, we didn't follow rules. No, we were free. It was just that, of course, we wouldn't feel quite right about breaking these unwritten rules either. We were free to, but wouldn't. not if we really loved Jesus, not if we wanted our lives to work out right. The rules were particularly hard on girls. Girls in our brethren group had to deal with mandatory long hair, little or no makeup or jewelry, and no wearing trousers or shorts to meetings, as they were men's apparel. 15-year-old girls got taken aside by frantic middle-aged men who told them they simply couldn't wear jean skirts that exposed their legs right up to their knees and not wear pantyhose in July. And the wives were often more aggressive about these dire warnings than the men. Melody, from a group so similar to mine that we haven't yet been able to work out what our groups even called each other, says she did not generally want to make waves. She says,
"My concern was more about avoidance of conflict. I preferred to keep the peace, except on the few occasions where I would deliberately rile up my dad by asking why we did certain things. It was not okay for girls to wear pants to Sunday school picnics or anything like that. Even to this day at Young People's Stuff, if it's in the church building, dresses and head coverings are expected of females. Guys, on the other hand, show up in jeans, shorts, suits, whatever they feel like. I'd be made aware of rules by frowns and sad faces when I broke them. When I cut my hair short at age 18, my dad didn't speak to me for 3 days. At church, our most controlling elder would make comments followed by, 'Don't you think so too?' As in, 'Everyone who wants to be baptized must also want to be received into assembly fellowship, don't you think so?' Or, 'It's pretty clear that Paul's name changed immediately after conversion, don't you think?' Or, 'Scripture is very clear about whatever, don't you think?' You were told what the right answer was and expected to fall in. The thread was keeping to the party line as laid down by the most controlling elder and being sure your Christian image wasn't tarnished."
Some families simply ruled out girls wearing pants or shorts to meeting events. In others, like my family, girls and women weren't allowed to wear pants at all. Darlene, from our branch of Brethren, writes,
"The rules made by Brethren were senseless and caused much stress. As a young girl, I was not allowed to wear pants. Going anywhere during winter was so painful from being inadequately dressed. Walking home from school was brutal, as Ottawa winters were bitterly cold."
Anne, missionary's kid in a foreign land, writes,
"I remember the first time I got to wear jeans. My whole life, until seventh grade, I could wear only skirts or culottes, long, baggy shorts. Finally, we must have worn Dad down. So he took us to a thrift store, and I wound up with a secondhand pair of jeans that were boys' jeans. Ironic, because the whole reason we'd not been allowed to wear pants all along was some verse about not wearing men's clothes. Somehow, that slipped through. And then, some people in the meeting who were super legal were making comments and noticing that we had pants. Meanwhile, others wore them. In a third world country, women and girls would often wear pants to meeting, and it wasn't a crazy scandal. Of course, I never did. However, I remember hating wearing skirts, and once I went into the bathroom at the meeting room and changed into pants or culottes or something and was hanging out in a non-skirt outside the meeting room. I was asked not to do that again."
Carol, in a stricter Brethren group in New Zealand, says, when asked what happened when she broke the rules,
"Nothing happened because I was so practiced in the Brethren art of deception that I made sure nobody found out I was breaking the rules. I bought women's weekly magazines and novels. I cut my hair to get rid of split ends, carefully and cleverly using a match to singe the ends like my mother had done when I was small so they didn't look cut. Inside myself, I initially felt a bit of guilt, but had already decided to break the rule and take responsibility for whatever fallout, godly, parental or brethrenly, ensued. So I just got on with it after a while. Sometimes my brethren conscience would kick in, and I'd stop the rule breaking for a while. But the desire would overtake me and I'd be back into whatever it was again. That cycle only repeated a few times before I gave up the guilt and let conscience be damned. Proportionately, I knew that mostly I was a good rule-abiding girl, so I think I sort of contented myself that the maths just about stacked up okay."
Anne writes,
"I recall distinctly reading books about hiking, rock climbing, sailing, outdoorsy people, and feeling like I couldn't do that stuff because I always had to be at a meeting on Sunday, which totally cramped my style. Nothing I liked was explicitly against the rules, but it wasn't Christ-centered, so it wasn't encouraged. In fact, finding a career path that was exciting was unimportant, and it has been hard for me to prioritize doing something that I like. The overwhelming message I got was that what I like doesn't matter. I did keep things I liked a secret a lot. Novels were discouraged, although not outright banned. I was not allowed to have fashion magazines, which I enjoyed reading in the library. I did feel that my pleasures had to be secret, even though there was nothing bad about them.
Melody says,
enforcement was just through peer pressure. No one stepped too far out of line. I was always afraid of drawing too much attention to myself to do anything really transgressive, like wear pants to a meeting. I would do things like wear lipstick instead. No one ever said anything, and I'm pretty sure I got the look from a lot of people, but it wasn't bad enough to make me stop. However, my forays into rule breaking were very limited. I didn't know you could have a real friendly relationship with God. Everyone I knew seemed to be so formal with him, praying in King James English, etc. No one talked about God or Jesus like they were real people. We talked a lot about living in the fear of the Lord, which I still don't feel has been adequately defined. Our common usage of fear is too Old Testament smitey for me, and from my own reading, I just don't see that that's how Jesus is. He's long-suffering and forgiving, not waiting to smite me.
Anne made her break with Brethren rules mostly to connect with a guy. For her, it was
dating a non-Christian and later having sex. I think I was just doing what was natural for someone my age, connecting with another individual. It wasn't breaking rules as much as just following my nature. Humans are supposed to connect with other humans, date them, have physical relationships. I was conflicted because I'd been told this was wrong. But I was just being human. So I kept secrets inside me, which was hard and not fun. It made me feel very alone, trying hard to live in two different worlds that were completely contradictory. I tried so hard to bridge the divide. I thought I could somehow sneak into marriage soon enough that I would avoid the controversy.
Louisa didn't break the rules much before she left Brethren culture, really. She couldn't. Just when she was starting to feel free to wear pants around the house, she still found that
when the doorbell rang, I'd quick put on a skirt before I went to the door. It was this increasing double life that was one of the many reasons why I left the meeting, as I could not handle the disruption it brought to me internally. It was like I was lying all the time, simply by living two lives.
I was a Brethren guy and didn't have to dress very differently from other guys at my school. And I didn't ask too many questions about our rules at youth group events of this kind. I was weird, like a few of us. Instead, I had questions that I felt were even more important than ones about why we couldn't have TV or go to dances. Mine were more directly about God himself. I didn't ask the middle-aged men who spoke at our meetings because I kind of knew they didn't seem to think that deeply, or spouting party-line stuff, mostly. I've since met some others like me. We had moved on at that point to wrestling with who God was rather than just smarting under the meeting rules. The person, rather than the culture, was what we were now focusing upon. We'd been raised to believe that there was a God, and we assumed there was one, but who was he? And what did he have to do with all this meeting stuff? I'm sure other teens rolled their eyes when we got doctrinal, but some of us were starting to have strong reservations about how meeting and meeting Christians were perceived and how they behaved in the world at large. It wasn't mommy and daddy are fighting. It was the Bible and the meeting are telling me two different things. We felt like we were being pulled in two directions, because we were. Things we felt and things we believed were starting to be at odds. Internal fissures and rips were forming in us. Programming and growth were starting to very clearly be at odds. But when you tried to talk about any of that, the adults started looking for somewhere to hide. They'd warn you against that kind of thinking. They'd tell you the Bible had all the answers, and they'd really, really recommend reading it, a chapter, every single day. This was little help if, like me, you had read it years earlier, continued to read it, and it daily caused more, rather than less, wrestling. If it indicted meeting culture, more than vindicated it. The people I talked to about this book were unanimous, even those who are now atheists, in saying that the Bible seemed to contradict the legalism seen in our meeting culture, if one read the whole thing, and not just the out-of-context bits used to support the legalism. Ruth says,
I recall being so indoctrinated as a small child that I literally thought that a woman who wore pants, trousers, could not be a Christian woman. When I read the scripture used to make that claim as a discerning adult and realized that the surrounding scriptures were completely ignored, I felt that application was quite a stretch.
As a teenager, if you came to adults with even more questions because you'd been reading the Bible as they suggested, this really upset them. Because it was supposed to work the other way. Reading the Bible was supposed to soothe and shut down your inquiries, not make you look at things more deeply. It was supposed to have the answers to everything.